You are listening to the Covenant Eyes podcast. Today, we are playing the second portion of our interview with Trailer and Melody Lovern. Trey's involvement with pornography and chat rooms led to adultery and eventually their divorce. Melody remarried another man a couple years later, only to shortly after get divorced again. Later, Trey and Melody reconciled and then remarried after being divorced for 6 years. In this portion of the interview, Melody speaks about the pain she felt during and after the divorce. She also talks about the personal growth she experienced as a result of her divorces.
So definitely a lot of anger came out, and I think the anger coincided with allowing me to stay the victim. To stand in front of the mirror and start having to look at yourself and the responsibilities that you have contributed in a relationship, it's a lot harder to do. What I found is I didn't have a lot of boundaries, and so I would do things that maybe I didn't want to do, but I couldn't say no. That's what codependency looks like. It's a dependency in a relationship, but we find a lot of our significance in doing.
We didn't want to admit there were any issues. You know, we had it all together and trying to ignore the elephant in the room that we've got some problems. But instead of talking about that, we felt like in some way we needed to work harder rather than just allowing ourselves to be human.
Hear more of this story today on the Covenant Eyes podcast. Melody, when you and Trey were divorced because of his sexual addiction, the adultery, the one night stands, and that sort of thing, what sort of emotions and thoughts were going through your mind?
Man, I think I had a lot of different emotions going on when we separated and then got back together. I think in my mind, a lot of my thought processes were, okay, we know why he's doing this, we're getting help, we're sharing our testimony, and therefore this isn't going to happen again. That, you know, we've kind of uncovered a lot, so therefore it's not going to happen again. And then when it happened again a year later, it really kind of sent me in a tailspin. And I think initially I was embarrassed, you know, being in a church, taking him back, and then ending up that happening a year later. It was a very embarrassing time, I think, for me. But I think after the initial embarrassment, probably just devastation, and then after the divorce, a lot of anger. You know, I would not say a whole lot of things in front of the children, but I definitely wanted to try to admit that I wasn't happy with him. And that was a place that I didn't have to be Christ-like to him anymore, because he had kind of ruined my life, my picture perfect of what I thought, you know, our life was going to be like. And so definitely a lot of anger came out. And I think the anger coincided with allowing me to stay the victim and not having to completely look inside myself.
I think that's something that's very typical for a lot of women. I know we have a lot of women who write emails to us and comment on our blog and those sort of things. And these sort of emotions are incredibly common for people who feel cheated on or who have been cheated on, whether it be with pornography or whether it be with other, you know, whether it be through other mediums. But there was a point where you started looking also at your own issues, and you were able to see what role you played in your relationship problems. And I know this isn't really popular to talk about, because in our culture, there very much is a desire to be the victim. And so while I don't necessarily recommend to women that they immediately cease seeing themselves as a victim, because it's true, they have been hurt, that someone has hurt them, someone has done a wrong to them, someone has sinned against them, and that needs to be acknowledged for what it is. But at some point, you started seeing things from your own perspective. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. Trey came out with everything in about December of 2000. And as he said, I think we separated for about 6 months. And he went to an intensive on sexual addiction to kind of begin the process of understanding it. And I started going to a counselor. Probably a couple weeks into that, I remember getting a pamphlet from her. And it was on a workshop for a weekend in Nashville. But what I found when I went up there that weekend was really it was more about the co-addict. You know, I know a lot of women don't like to hear that, the co-addict or the codependent.
Yeah, can you describe for our listeners, because this term's kind of kicked around in different circles, what is codependency? What is co-addiction? How can you define those things? And how did it manifest in your life?
I guess that word is kicked around a lot, but I would say if somebody were to ask me, you know, what does that look like? You know, a lot of times I'll just say, you know, if you find yourself, you're caretaking all the time, you're thinking and feeling responsible for a lot of other people, you feel it's your responsibility to help people or fix people or solve their problems, and, you know, needy people are attracted to you, you feel unappreciated. What I found is I didn't have a lot of boundaries, and so I would do things that maybe I didn't want to do, but I couldn't say no, and then I'd resent the fact that, you know, I maybe resent somebody else for doing it. That's, I would say, what codependency looks like. It's a, you know, it's a dependency in a relationship, but we find a lot of our significance in doing. And, you know, fortunately for me growing up in the church, I always thought that that just equated godliness, you know, and God wants to help people. He wants to share our time and our talents and our money and all those things with other people, but he wants us to give out of a place of high, you know, high esteem. He wants to give from a cup that's full and not a cup that's empty. And when you're giving and you're giving all the time, you don't really take the time to fill that cup up. So
I think it's important to point out that Melody's codependency was not the reason that my addiction manifested. So I definitely don't want that to come across. My issues predated Melody, and you know, and I, like many people, thought that, okay, marriage is going to kind of fix this because, you know, I was a virgin when we got married, as was Melody, and now we're going to be able to enjoy sex in the realms that God created it. But because I had spent so many years with a false intimacy, didn't really understand how to pursue intimacy, and that's where our stuff began to show up. And for me, and I think I can speak for Melody, we didn't want to admit there were any issues. You know, we had it all together. And that's where I think for each other we were performing and trying to ignore the elephant in the room that we've got some problems. But instead of talking about that, again, instead of bringing God into those struggles, we felt like in some way we weren't being super Christian enough. We needed to work harder rather than just allowing ourselves to be human and allowing ourselves to experience God in those moments and bring him into that struggle.
Again, it's a lot easier to just say, okay, if Trey just goes and gets fixed, then we can start something new if that's what I wanted. But, you know, to stand in front of the mirror and start having to look at yourself and the responsibilities that you have contributed in a relationship, it's a lot harder to do. I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. Now, it sounds in some ways very similar to the performance treadmill that Trey was on, but just manifested it in a different way. In Trey's case, you have this sort of performance treadmill. You're moving round and round. You're doing the thing. You're doing the Christian, you know, social duty. But in his case, it created this great craving, a desire for another life where he could really be himself, and thus the attraction of pornography in the chat rooms and those sort of things. In your case, it drove you deeper and deeper into the performance track where you wanted to, where your whole identity and everything about you was summed up in, am I doing the best I can as in all the roles I have as a church woman, as a mother, as a wife, as all these different things. Mm-hmm. And so it was just more or less a desire to, as you were saying, the codependency is I'm dependent on how other people see I'm helping. And how other people see I'm doing these things, and maybe how I am as a wife or how I am as a mother or whatever.
Right. Exactly. And it's funny because when you look at the story of Mary and Martha in the Bible, Mary's sitting at Jesus' feet, and Martha's, you know, in the kitchen banging pots and probably frantic and frustrated that Mary's not helping her. And there was a time where that was definitely me. You know, I'm doing it. I'm not necessarily getting help. And, you know, a lot of that was my own issues because I wouldn't say no, and I felt like I had to do it. But now looking back on that, I want to be the Mary. I want to be more focused on the relationship. So there was a time that I didn't like that story, but I'm finding now that you know, Jesus definitely points out that Mary chose to sit at Jesus' feet, and that it is important that relationships don't take the place of just the duties and the many things that we get ourselves pointed, you know, caught up in.
Well, oh, that's great. I love what you said, Melody, about Mary, the example of Mary of Bethany, because there's, from when I read the New Testament, I see three big stories about her that include her as a main character. One is the story you mentioned where Martha's banging pots in the kitchen and she's sitting at Jesus' feet listening to him. And Jesus makes very clear, Mary has chosen the better part. She has chosen to sit at my feet and listen, as opposed to you who are just kind of running around frantic and doing your thing, feeling that you gotta be busy with this stuff. The second story is the story of the death of their brother, Lazarus. And when he died, there was, of course, a great amount of sorrow that both Mary and Martha were experiencing. Martha's reaction was to come up to Jesus and to begin to kind of vent and to, to tell him, oh, you know, if only you'd been here, this kind of thing. Mary's reaction was, again, to fall at his feet. We find her again at Jesus's feet. And there she says similar things to what Martha says, but in an attitude of humble reverence as she sat at Jesus's feet. And the third story we find with her is where she anoints Jesus a week before he dies. And again, we find her at his feet, pouring out this incredibly expensive perfume, this incredibly expensive gift on his feet, again, as an act of worship, as an act of reverence, as an act of humility. And much to the consternation of people around her, Mary has this sort of unhindered, I don't really care what people think about me, I really only care about what Jesus thinks about me kind of spirit. And it's that kind of thing that Jesus absolutely loved about her, and why he said, tales are going to be told of Mary of Bethany after I'm gone. People are going to talk about her wherever this gospel is preached. She's such an incredible example of someone who isn't so tied to the opinions of others and isn't so tied to performance. She's tied to Jesus and the love and the admiration of and the respect for and dependence upon Jesus, and not on other people necessarily.
You've been listening to the second portion of our interview with Traylor and Melody Lovern. In the next segment, we will be hearing more from Trey and Melody. I'm your host, Luke Gilkerson, and you are listening to the Covenant Eyes podcast. Hear more podcasts on iTunes or visit the Covenant Eyes blog, Breaking Free, at covenanteyes.com/blog.